class, which has been a little bit of a hiatus over the last number of weeks because of the Yom Tovim, but I could not be happier to be back, to be learning together once again, to have the opportunity to grow together and to inspire each other, and to learn one of our most sacred texts, Sefer Tehillim, which we are slowly but surely going through in its entirety, and it's a great bracha to be able to learn with all of you here today. Today we're going to be doing chapter 94 of Tehillim, Tzadi Dalid. And it's a chapter that hopefully should be familiar to many of you because it is the song of the day for Wednesday. You said it yesterday, hopefully, if you daven. Kel Nekamos Hashem, Kel Nekamos Hophia. Now, you'll notice that at the end of the chapter that you say on Wednesdays, we add in L'chun Aranna. We add in the first few phrases of Kabbalah Shabbos for Shabbos. When that came exactly into the liturgy was most likely around the 17th century, but it's important to remember that it's not actually part of the Tehillim. The reason why it was added, in all likelihood, was because we wanted to give us some yearning for Shabbos, that Wednesday is that transition point from the week when we already start getting ready for Shabbos. Wednesday is when people start cooking for Shabbos and cleaning for Shabbos and shopping for Shabbos. So L'chun Aranna, for the song of the day, we kind of remind ourselves that Shabbos is coming, it's time to get ready. That's like the first of the wake-up calls for Shabbos about to come. But obviously that's not within the actual Perek of Tehillim. But again, so we're doing chapter 94. The chapter can be split up into primarily three sections. Section number one is going to be Psukim 1 through 7. And there, the author of this Perek of Tehillim is going to complain about the way evildoers in this world act. And not only the way that they act in this world, but the success that they have in this world. Verses 8 through 15 is going to put that into perspective. And it's going to help us understand that while the wicked might prosper, ultimately, what is our job? Our job is to put our faith in Hashem. And then at the end, verses 16 through 23 is about how a person experiences salvation when trusting in Hashem. The author of the chapter of Tehillim is going to refer to a very specific case, one that we don't know what it is, but he's very troubled by something, and the Mefarshim are torn about what exactly he is bothered by, and we'll have to examine that just a little bit. But the author of this Perek of Tehillim is bothered by something, and he ultimately comes to the recognition, the realization, that salvation occurs when we place our faith in Hashem. So you have three sections, again, complaining about the way the evildoers act in the world, putting that into the context of a greater relationship with Hashem, and ultimately, what do we respond when we go through difficult moments, and that is by putting our faith in Hashem. Ultimately, if you really had to summarize this chapter of Tehillim, you would say, how do you react when you see bad, good things happen to bad people? How do you react when you say that they're evil, wicked people that seem to be not only thriving, but surviving? And the answer is, obviously, as we've studied multiple times throughout our studying of Perek of Tehillim, is that a person needs to put his trust in Hashem, that there is ultimately a system of justice, and that while you and I don't fully understand it now, and while we are limited in our scope and in our ability to understand it, ultimately, our faith is that justice is right around the corner for any of these wicked people. The Rav Hirsch, in his introduction, we're going to be referring to Rav Hirsch a lot in this chapter, because while all the Mefarshim go in one direction, Rav Hirsch goes in a different direction. That's kind of fun sometimes to do, is to see how some of the more modern commentaries are able to twist some of the more ancient commentaries and provide more meaning and context for us. But Rav Hirsch, in the introduction, points out that the two chapters that came immediately before this were the two chapters that we say right after Kabbalah Shabbos as we enter into Shabbos. One is Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos, and the other is Hashem Malach Keus Lavesh, Lavesh Hashem Oz Hizazar, again, chapters 92 and 93. First points out that the commonality between chapters 92 and 93 is that inspired by the spirit of Shabbos, we are able to transport ourselves from the doom and gloom of the week, from the difficulty and challenges of the week, and we're allowing ourselves to dream of a brighter day. And so we extract ourselves from the challenges of this world, and we put ourselves in a me'ein olam haba, an existence that is similar to the world to come, and with that, we are able to let go and experience the bliss of Shabbos. First points out that then we come to chapter 94. In 94, he says, which is in contrast to chapters 92 and 93, dwells very much on the present time, which is still fraught with strife and sorrow. In other words, chapter 94 takes us back down to earth. It attempts, first of all, to check the despondency which takes hold of so many as they behold this apparent success of evil, and which causes them to doubt God's providence. And so whereas chapters 92 and 93, we extract ourselves from the doom and the gloom and the despondency, and we kind of fantasize a little bit, chapter 94 is very real. We bring ourselves back down to earth, so to speak. We reflect upon a life that is filled with strife and sorrow. And despite all of the evil and despite all of the difficulties, nonetheless, we reinforce our emuna in Hashem. And so it's the equivalent of sitting here in a pandemic. I don't know anyone who has felt a little bit despondent over the last number of months. And there are two ways to react. Number one is you could say, you know what, I'm dreaming. I'm going to fantasize about that day when I can get back on that cruise ship, when I can go to my vacation, when I can see my grandchildren, what's going to be like, and right? And then there's the way of saying, okay, I can't do that right now. I'm sitting where I am right now. I'm not with my grandchildren. I'm not with my family. I'm not able to do the things that I want. But despite that, I'm still going to have emunah in Hashem. That, says Rav Hirsch, is somewhat the difference between chapters 92 and 93 and our chapter of 94. So all of that was a way of introducing our chapter today, which is chapter 94, which starts off with a bang. We say, El Nekamos Adonai, El Nekamos Hofia. We call Hashem a God of revenge. What we're essentially asking Hashem to do is to enact vengeance against those who are blatantly ignoring his ways, blatantly thumbing their nose at the ways of God in this world. The Malbim points out and says, wait a second. If in the last chapter we spoke about Hashem's perfection and how great Hashem is, then what about the bad people? And what about the suffering of the good people? Says the Malbim, that's the transition between chapter 93 and 94. 93 was all about how Hashem is so perfect. 94 is when we say, wait a second. If Hashem is so perfect, then why is it that you and I don't see justice in the world? Why do we see evil, wicked people succeed, and we see really great people who have very bad things happen to them? Radak says that this is about galus. Mispala lekarev hageula mibavel, ulakachad az nekama meharishayim, ki kein hivtiach bedivrei hanavi. Says the Malbim that we are talking about here redemption from the exile, that the Babylonians came, destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, they sent us into exile, and what we are asking for from Hashem is to take revenge against those Babylonians, as you promised you would do in all of your Nevi'im. Rav Hirsch points out that Kel Nekamos Hashem is an appeal rising up to Hashem, and that terminology resonated a little bit with me, that it's an appeal to Hashem. It's essentially you're throwing your hands up to Hashem and you're saying, God, I know you exist. That's not what we're questioning here in this chapter of Tehillim. We know Hashem exists. What we're challenged with is, despite the fact that you exist, why then doesn't the world run according to what we would anticipate it running like? In other words, if you told me that a perfect God is in charge of the world, I would expect the world to be run perfectly. And yet, you and I look around the world, and not only is the world not run perfectly, but there's a lot of imperfection in the world. There's a lot of evil in the world. There's a lot of wrong in the world. And so says, refers, this is an appeal to Hashem. El Nekamos Hashem. Hashem, show your vengeance, not because necessarily we need to see it. We need to experience it. We need that reinforcement of our emunah in you. Kel Nekamos Hofia. Hofia, says the Meforshim, comes from the language of Higale, reveal, right? Higale aleinu v'kach nechmasan aleim, says Radak. Reveal your vengeance. In other words, even though we know, Hashem, that in this world it's going to be one set of circumstances and that there's going to be justice and punishment and reward in the next world, we ask Hashem, Higla Aleinu, give us a little bit of an insight. Give us a little bit of a glimpse. Because, you know, sometimes, Hashem, it's so hard to believe in you when there's so much doom and gloom around us. It's so hard to believe. Think about how many people throughout history were taken away from a belief in Hashem because they saw the success of wicked people and they were drawn to that success. And they were lured in by the fantasies of that success. And so we say to Hashem, Hofia, reveal your system of justice. Show the world that you are in charge, that the good will be rewarded and that the bad will be punished, so that, as we'll see a theme developing later on, so that people can do the right thing. It'll help us, Hashem, do the right thing. The Medrash on this pasuk uses or introduces us to the phrase that Hashem is a kel mistater, that Hashem is a hidden God. In other words, His ways are hidden from us. He is ne'elam, that's the word olam. God is hidden from us in this world. And that is what's frustrating the author of this Perek of Tehillim. And it is what frustrates us when we read this Perek of Tehillim. We ask Hashem, Hashem, please reveal yourself. Stop being so hidden. Stop having your ways be hidden. Stop having your system of justice and judgment be hidden. But reveal just a little bit of it to us. In this Hasidic Sefer that I have on Tehillim, he has a beautiful insight here. He says, where am I? He says, "Lefamim ha'chitzonim roim sha'adam iskarev atzmo labori ha'baruchu." There are times when our enemies, or those who try to draw us away from Hashem, see that we're coming close to Hashem, and therefore they double down their efforts, and they cause us to sin. But what they don't realize, right, is that they're actually helping us. Ava be'emes al yedei zeh, from the fact that they caused us to sin, mitchazek ha'adam yoser la'avodaso, it causes us to want it even more. It causes us to want to come close to Hashem even more, right? Kesheosa tshuva, mipnei she'ala hanitzotzot. And that's what he says. It means, kel nekamos Hashem. In other words, you Hashem, bal nekamos, you who exact revenge, right? Hofia. In other words, osana nekamos, that which you take revenge because what we did wrong, al yedei ze'adaraba, me'ir u'mefia nishmas adam. May our mistakes be turned into merits. May our mistakes be turned into catalysts for our overall improvement. And that's what we ask Hashem, right? Kel nekamos hofia. Let it be revealed. Let it be revealed, our neshamas with inside of us, even when we're drawn away from you, even when we had made mistakes in the past, let it all allow us to come just a little bit closer to you. So I know I unloaded a lot in the very first pasuk, whether it's the Malbim, which is that, wait a second, if Hashem is perfect, how can good things happen to bad people? Whether it was Radak, that we're talking about Gullus here, we're talking about the exile, and we're asking Hashem to take revenge against our enemies. Whether it's that notion of reverse, that this is an appeal to Hashem, of the kel mistater, Hashem, please reveal yourself, don't be hidden to us, or that beautiful Hasidish idea that I just shared. Clearly, what's represented in this pasuk is that while vengeance is allowed by Hashem, it's never allowed by us. Right? That's an important caveat to point out, that while we don't take revenge, we do daven to Hashem to take revenge, not because we want people to be hurt, but because we want Hashem to be revealed. We want people to be drawn to Hashem. We don't want them to question Hashem anymore. That was all pasuk number one. Pasuk number two, Hinasei shofet haaretz. You, Hashem, the judge of the world, you should be uplifted. And Hashev gemul al geim. And you should return the gemul, the punishment, to the Geim. Who are the Geim? So the Radak points out, HaGeim means like the arrogant, okay? Those who uplift themselves. And so says the Radak, Kolomar, Sheyavinu HaGeim. Those arrogant ones, they should see, Ki Ata Ram V'Nisa, that you, Hashem, is the one who is great, not them, V'Tashiv Aleim Gemul Maseim, and that you are going to pay them back for what they did wrong. It's essentially schar v'onesh. It's our system of divine reward and punishment. Okay? So you have to follow the poetry of that pasuk. Hinasei shofet haaretz. You, Hashem, should be uplifted. But hashev gemul al geim. Those geim, those people that thought that they were such a starka people, no, you should put them down. You should make them realize who really is in charge. And then almost in like a desperation, you come to pasuk 3, Ad matai rishaim Adonai, ad matai rishaim yalozu. Like, how long are you going to tolerate this, Hashem? How long are you going to allow the wicked? Yalozu says the Mitzud HaSiyum comes from the word yismichu. How long, Hashem, are you going to allow them to rejoice and to basically laugh at you and to make fun of you and to desecrate you? Okay, pasuk 4, yabiu, yidamru, atak, yitamru kopole aven. That is an interesting pasuk. I'll translate it for you outside, and then we'll translate inside. But it's a nice way of saying that they speak negatively against you, right? Yabiu, Yedabru, Atak are all three languages of speech, right? Mitsuda Sion says that Atak just means like Davar Chazak. It's like a stronger form of speech. So they speak like really forcefully against you. Yisamru, Kol Poleaven. Yisamru, again, Radak says, comes from the word Yitga'u V'yitgalug Negdecha. They are being uplifted against you. So as opposed to you, Hashem, which are being desecrated and mocked, they are being uplifted. They are being given all the kavod. Okay? So we say to Hashem, but they're speaking negatively against you. So most Meforshim understand that Yabiu, Yedabru, and Atak are simply all forms of speech. And the difference being between them is that it's just for emphasis, right? For example, the Radak says that, right? Inyan dibur va'od amru yedabru. Hakefa lechazek. Kolomar kitamid heima medabrim neka gavot. In other words, it's like to showcase that this is always happening. They're always speaking negatively against you. And so why do we have three verbs connoting speech? Says the Radak, it's simply because we're saying it over and over again. It's for a form of, it's for emphasis. The Rav Hirsch points out that it's actually three different forms of speech. That Yabiu means to pour out, Yedabru means to speak harshly, and Yisamru means to speak softly. In other words, under all circumstances, they speak against you. When they're yelling at you, they're speaking against you. When they're speaking quietly, they're speaking against you. They're always speaking against you. Okay, so you have Radak, who it's for emphasis. Rav Hirsch, who says that each one connotes a different type of speech, but it's to show us that under all circumstances, they're speaking out against you. Rav Hirsch then points out that this word atak actually has a different connotation and a different definition. In Rav Hirsch, Kedarko Bakodesh, which he's often wont to do, he says, if you want to understand a word, where do you look? You look to the first place that it's used in Tanakh. So where is the first place that the word atak is used in Tanakh? Any Bale Kriya here on the chat? Now, it's a little bit of an unfair question because we're a week off of it. If next week you didn't know the answer, then I would have been a little bit more disappointed. No, I'm just kidding. Comes up in Parshas Lech Lecha. Right at the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, the Pasuk says in chapter 12, verse 8, Vayateik Misham Hahara. What does Vayateik mean over there? Right? So what do we know? Let's put a lot together. We know the word Atak. Okay? We say it every Friday night, every Shalosh Shudis. Vasik Ye'emuna, right? Vatik. We refer to Hashem as Vatik, which if you look in the translation means that Hashem is the, I don't know, how do you translate Vatik? Vatik means, if you look in Art Scroll Koren, it means ancient one. Well, you refer to Hashem as the ancient one. How does that help us here, right? Yabiu, Yedabru, Atak. Right, they spoke, and they spoke anciently. Rav Hirsch says that doesn't really fit. What is Vayateik Misham Hahara? That, I don't even know how they translate Vayateik in that pasuk over there, right? If anyone has an art scroll, they can tell me. But Vayateik Misham Hahara, it definitely talks about Avram's leaving, right? Avram's going somewhere. So first points out, not in his commentary here on Tehillim, but he sends you to his commentary on Bereishis, and he says over there that the word Vayateik Misham Hahara means to move in an unexpected, unnatural way. In other words, to do something that we would not have expected to happen, or to do something that is out of the ordinary, that is out of context. So Vayateik Misham Hahara means that naturally, Avram should never have left. Naturally, despite the fact that Hashem says, Lech lecha me'artzecha me'miladetecha, leave your homeland and go to some strange place and follow me, naturally, what we would have expected would be Avram to say, no, I'm very comfortable where I am. Avram does something unexpected. He does something in an unnatural way. That's his reverse, Vayateik Misham Hahara. Okay? Atak, Vayateik, is referred to in Hebrew as an antique. Why do you refer to an antique ware or an antique vase or whatever as a atik? Right? Why is that same definition? So reverse points out, because what's an antique? An antique is something that stands out in a bizarre way, right? It belongs to a different generation, and I take it and I supplant it in this generation. So if I take my antique vase, it means that it belonged to my great-great-grandmother, right? And it's a little antiquated. It belongs to a different generation. But despite the fact that it's an antique, what am I doing with it? I'm keeping it in my house. And even though it's a little bit out of place, it has sentimental value to me. That's what an antique represents, says Rafersh. So now let's take it to our context. Okay? Yabiu, yidabru, atak. If the word atak means something unexpected or unnatural, then here what it means is that the Rishayim, the wicked people here, are speaking words that are unprecedented. That are unprecedented and that crosses red lines. That crosses the normal way that people would speak in an illogical, calm-headed manner. Okay, that's how they speak against the Jews. That's how they speak against you, Hashem. Now, if you understand refers that way, how relevant is this pasuk? Yabiu, yidabru, atak. They speak in unprecedented ways. They speak in illogical ways. They speak in ways that make no sense. They speak in ways that no one would have had the audacity to speak about 15, 20, 30 years ago. Is there any greater definition to describe the Jewish people than that? Right? Think about the language that's used in America nowadays when it comes to Jews, when it comes to anti-Semitism. It's verbiage that we never would have imagined 10, 15, 30 years ago. Right? The comfort with which people pass off anti-Semitic comments, the comfort with which people bash Israel, and despite the fact that you and I both know that's a cover for anti-Semitism, they simply say, no, I'm just against Zionism, I'm not against all Jews. And therefore they can say lines like, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Do you understand what the river and the sea means? Right? The river is the Jordan River, and the sea is the Mediterranean. And if you get rid of Jews from the river to the sea, then what's left? Nothing. Right? It's a call for massacre, right? It's a call for genocide. It's a call for wiping the Jews out of Israel. And yet, you go to the majority of college campuses nowadays, that's like, you know, there's like good morning, and then there's that chant in many college campuses, right? 20, 30 years ago, after the Holocaust, you never would have dreamed that people would speak that way. This notion of anti-Zionism really being a cover for anti-Semitism, the BDS movement, right? All of this, says Rav Hirsch, is what we're talking about when we say, Yabiu Yidabru Atak. They speak about you, Hashem, in unprecedented ways. They are emboldened to speak about you in ways that cross red lines, in ways that we wouldn't have tolerated previously, but somehow, because it seeps slowly into our lexicon, slowly into our parlance, it becomes acceptable. I spoke about that one year in Parshas Korach. Parshas Korach, I started off by wondering, did Korach really think he'd be successful? Right? Korach introduces a challenge to Moshe Rabbeinu. Did Korach really think he'd succeed in that challenge? And so I suggested that no, Korach did not think he would be successful in this challenge of Moshe. But what he did think he would do was plant a seed, that he would introduce a concept that perhaps slowly over generations would germinate until it eventually became a bona fide accepted concept, right? And that's what we see enemies do all the time, right? When Zionism is racism was introduced, there was an outcry. Now, I don't know, I think that's like the common norm in certain segments of American society, right? Where Zionism is a dirty word and represents represents apartheid and represents, right? Those are things that 20, 30 years ago were not accepted by either political party on either side of the aisle, right? In either side of the political parties. It was really a fringe of the conversation. And now it's become mainstream. It's become accepted. It's become the narrative on many college campuses. It's become the narrative in Europe, right? That's as refers as Yabiu Yidabru Atak. Doesn't just mean they speak strongly against you. It means they are unprecedented. It means they cross red lines. It means that things that we would never have expected or that are unnatural, illogical, they all of a sudden feel very confident speaking about us in those terms. And so again, Pasuk Dalet is very relevant because it's all about Israel. It's all about anti-Semitism nowadays. Amcha Adonai Yidaku, v'nachalascha Ye'anu. Right, your people now are Yidaku, which means we are like beaten down. We are broken. V'nachalascha Ye'anu. Anu says Mitzudas Sion comes from the word Inui. In other words, they are oppressing us. They are persecuting us. Everyone is persecuted. Pasuk Vav, Almana Veger Yaharogu. And not only do they persecute us, but they kill the widows. And the Ger here can either be a convert, or as the Radak points out, it's a Jew who's in a foreign village. Right? In other words, when I'm in my city, I have natural protection. But back then, when I went to a different city on business, I had none of my natural forms of protection. Nobody knew me. Nobody knew to look after me. So when I was most vulnerable, Yaharogu, V'yisomim yaratzeichu, when they kill the Yisomim. Meforshim over here point out that while everyone is persecuted, it's the widows and the orphans that are persecuted even worse. Why? Because they have no one to protect them. They have no one to look after them. They have no one to guard them. That is how brutal our enemies are to us. V'yomru, Pasuk Zayin. What do they say about Hashem? Lo yir era. They say, yeah, you know, we can get away with this. We can get away with this because God is not watching. God's not going to take justice against us. God's not going to exact vengeance against us. Vayomru lo yirela. God doesn't see what's going on. Hashem is oblivious. Hashem is absent from the world. Velo yavina lo heyakov. And Hashem doesn't understand what is going on here. Now, pshat in this pasuk, is that this is talking about the enemies. Right, that the enemies scoff at Hashem, and they say that we can act with complete immunity because God is not going to see, he's not listening, he's not paying attention, he's God, big pie in the sky, he's not worried about little John Doe over here, so there's going to be no consequences for my actions. Right? In Pasuk 7, in Pasuk 8, in Pasuk 9 is going to be a reminder that no, God is really watching. Refersh drops like an AA bomb on all of this. Changes the whole thing on its head. Says Rav Hirsch that we are not talking about the enemies, but rather we're talking about Jews. We're talking about Klal Yisrael. It's the Jews that are questioning Hashem. In other words, when it says V'yomru, who is the V'yomru? Who is saying this in Pasuk Zayin? So I assumed, and most of the classic Mefarshim assumed, that who is saying this is the enemies. The enemy is saying, you know why we can get away with whatever we want? Because God's not really looking and watching. Rav Hirsch says, no, it's us. It's the Jews who say, Vayomru, we the Jews say, Lo Yir Era. We question Hashem. It's a challenge to our emunah. When we see wicked people get away with whatever we want, it's a challenge to our emunah. It's a challenge to our belief in the system of reward and punishment, right? And if you're honest with yourself, every one of us goes through this at a certain time, right? Whether it was the Holocaust, whether it's persecution, and all of us at various times, at different levels, but it's natural to question, to say, like, Hashem, where are you? Why are you a kel mistatir? Why are you hidden? And so Vayomru says, first, it's the Jews who are saying, Lo yir era, like, God's not watching. Velo yavin elo Yaakov, he's not paying attention to what's going on. Okay, so again, we're not questioning God's existence, but we're questioning God's providence. We're questioning his knowledge of what's going on in this world. And so therefore, Pasachet now begins the response to all that. So 1 through 7 was setting the stage. It's reeking of frustration at Hashem for being hidden, for allowing, for tolerating. And it's an acknowledgement that when you see all of that happening around you, it causes the armor of Yeramuna to start having a little cracks in it. And so Pasuk 8 comes along, and it's the response to Klal Yisrael, according to Rav Hirsch. It's the response to Klal Yisrael. And what is that response? Binu Boarim Ba'am. Binu means what? It means, like, understand now, right? Uksilim Matai Taskilu. Ksil, you fools. When will you start Taskilu? When will you start opening your eyes and realize and seeing the truth? Radak points out, Ad matai tamdu bisichlusam chem. How long are you gonna remain in your foolishness, in your idiocy? Ki Elohim yodeo mavita kol, says the Radak. Of course Hashem knows everything. How do I know that Hashem knows and sees everything? Now we come to Pasuk 9. Because what is Hashem did? Hashem is the one who created us. Says Pasuk 9, Hanote ozen halo yishma. Im yotzer ayin halo yabit. In other words, if Hashem created our faculties, don't you think that He Himself has them? So if you and I can hear, don't you think Hashem can hear? And if you and I can see, don't you think that Hashem can see? Hashem wouldn't have created us with capabilities that He Himself does not have. Obviously, kaviyachol, we don't understand what any of this really means. But at least on our level of understanding, says the Radak, Eich tomru ki lo yishma'im velo yirim. How can you say, how can you have the chutzpah to say that Hashem does not hear and that Hashem does not see what's going on? V'halohu heichin kli hashomea v'haros. He gave us sight. He created our ears. How could it be that the one who created this doesn't have it on its own? Or doesn't at least understand how the mechanism works? Of course it happens, right? If we create computers, we obviously know how computers work, right? So if Hashem created us, obviously He has the capabilities of doing that. Says Rafersh, this is the response to the Jewish people, right? You fools, wake up, see Hashem, understand that it's an admonishment of the Jewish people. Because up until now, we have asked Hashem to appear. Now, the author of this Parakatilim looks back at us and says, no, Hashem is there. You need to open your eyes and be aware of it and see it and understand it. Okay, and that's obviously our job in this world. That in a world of Ne'elam, in a world where Hashem is so hidden, we have to create a revelation of Hashem. We have to see Hashem. We have to understand that there are things that are going to be beyond our level of understanding and our capability to grasp and to comprehend. Pasuk 10, Hayoser goyim halo yochiach hamelamed adam das, says Mitzudas David, hamayaser es hagoyim b'mabul uv'haflaga halo yochiach etchem. Right? In other words, we have precedent for this, my friends. We have precedent for the notion that Hashem enacts judgment and revenge against people who do things wrong. And you know where we have precedent in the parshios that we're reading now? The Dor HaFlaga that we're going to read about in this week's parsha, the Dor HaMabul that we're going to read about in this week's parsha. You look at these parshios and you realize that God is in charge, right? He punished Adam and Chava, He punished Cain, He punished the generation of the flood, He punished the generation of the HaFlaga. Says in Mitzudas David, that's all a reminder of Hayoser Goyim halo yachia chamelamed amadas. Hashem, we know, Hashem will pay people back. That Hashem is paying attention. That Hashem is keeping the scorecard. Pasuk Aleph, Adonai yodea machshavos adam kiim ahevel. Hashem knows. He created us. He understands what's going on in our minds, and He understands that we are innately imperfect. And therefore, pasuk Yedbeis, Ashrei hagever, Asher tiasrenu ya, umitorascha tilamdenu. Praiseworthy is the person who what? Praiseworthy is the person who takes the Musar from Hashem. Asher tiasrenu ya, who listens to Hashem and accepts His Musar, who accepts Hashem's constructive criticism. Says the Rav Hirsch over here, right? Why does Hashem at times fail to act to check wrongdoing, right? That's kind of the million-dollar question here. Why doesn't Hashem act when He sees wrongdoing? Therefore, says Rafersh, these two psukim, 11 and 12, give us the answers. 11 is to first we must remember that it is only in our limited insight that evil appears to be making constant progress. God, in His infinite wisdom, however, knows that in the end it is all hevel, it is all vanity. So that's Pasuk Yud Aleph. That's number one. Adonai yodea machshavos adam ki heima havel. If you think Hashem's not paying attention, remember that you and I are puny. You and I have a very limited ability to understand and appreciate the greater cosmos of the world. Hashem is infinite. Hashem is all-knowing. He created the world. He has calculations beyond our grasp and beyond our understanding. And so it's a reminder, ki heima havel. Remember how you guys don't really know a lot, right? It's Hashem who really knows everything. Second reason why Hashem fails to ask is Pasuk Yedbet. Secondly, says Rav Hirsch, the evil which God at times seems to tolerate actually serves to discipline man by helping to strengthen his moral fiber and to ennoble him. In other words, sometimes when bad things happen, it's to improve us. It's to make us better. It's to reveal certain things about ourselves that we didn't know previously existed. The wrong which a man must endure is part of that training course of suffering, which will refine him through discipline, a discipline to which God subjects only those of his children who are capable of improvement and ennoblement. Alas, for the man who God no longer deems worthy of the experience of suffering, for he is the one whom God has ceased to attempt to better and to refine. In other words, Hashem only wastes his time on people that he thinks are going to improve. If he thinks you are a lost cause, he's simply not going to bother. There is a great Charlie Harari video where he put out a bunch of years ago, around the time of the Yom Narayim, where he made this very point. He said that he was once working in a law firm, and he couldn't understand that the whole time he was working there, his bosses were riding him hard, and they were giving him a really hard time, and they were criticizing and critiquing, and And then there was the guy next to him, cubicle next to him, boss that didn't care about it at all. Whatever the guy did, sloppy work, schlocky, boss that didn't pay attention at all, they didn't really care. And he said it was so frustrating to him that the whole time here he is, he's busting his chops, he's doing the best that he can, and his bosses are riding him hard, and they're giving him a hard time, and they're giving him the papers back, and there's red marks all over it. And the guy next to him is you know, not as smart as him, not as hardworking at it, barely paying attention to him. He said until he realized, like 3 months after starting to work, that what happened? That the guy next to him gets fired, and what? And he still has a job. He makes partner in the law firm. And so what he realizes is that the entire time, the bosses were working him hard, and they were critiquing him because they wanted him to improve, because they saw that he had that potential, he had that capacity, and they wanted him to be able to improve. The guy next to him, the boss had given up on very early, and therefore they stopped paying attention to him altogether. And so that's exactly Refersh's point over here, right? Hashem only pays attention to those who he thinks can be refined and he thinks are worthy of it. Those are the ones that he pays attention to. Now, you could very easily say, Hashem, thanks, but no thanks, go on to the next person, right? But that's what our emunah is. That's what our faith in Hashem is that our totality of existence is not simply relegated to this world, but that there's another world, that there's reward and punishment, that there's olam haba, and this is what we believe in. Pasuk Yud Gimel, lahashkit lo mimeira, ad yikare l'rasha shachat. Again, we're asking Hashem to get rid of all of the evil, to again, obliterate, to utterly destroy any evil. Ki lo yitosh Adonai amo v'nachlaso lo yazo, because Hashem does not forsake us. Hashem does not abandon us. And we know, this is our emunah, ultimately, that Hashem is going to do right by us. Pasuk Tezvav 15, Kiat Sedek Yashu Mishpat, Ve'acharav Ko Yishrei Leim, because ultimately our emunah is that Hashem is going to do the right thing, that Hashem is going to showcase His justice for us, Ve'acharav Ko Yishrei Leim, right? And again, we are going to follow Him. We are going to be inspired by that, to be able to return to that. Says Metzudas David, Acharei Kichalos HaMishpat, after we see this judgment, after we see that Hashem punished the wicked and rewarded the tzaddikim, Yashuvu Kulam Lios Yishrei Lev. We're all going to get back on the right path. We're going to be so inspired to do the right thing. All the challenges to Amuna that we spoke about earlier, now we're going to be doing the right thing. Mi Yakum Li Im Mirim, Mi Yatsev Li Im Poale Avin. So now we transition to the third section, where something is bothering David HaMelech. There's some evil people that are affecting him. And David HaMelech wonders, who is going to help me? Mi Yakum Li Mirim, when they come after me, who's going to stand up on my behalf? Mi Yatsev Li Im Poale Avin, when again the wicked come and they persecute you, Mi Yatsev Li, who's going to stand beside me? Right? The author feels alone right now. He feels abandoned right now. And therefore he says in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Lulei Adonai Ezra Sali Kimat Shechna Duma Nafshi. If it weren't for Hashem, I would stand no chance. Now, who's coming after the author here? It's very unclear. According to the Radak, it's the Babylonians. According to the Das Mikra, we're talking about bad, evil, wicked Jews. We're not 100% sure who these bad people are, but something is obviously bothering the author. And he says, if it weren't for my faith in Hashem, then I'd be long gone. Pasuk Gidchet, a very famous pasuk, because Shlomo Karlbach put a song to it. Im amarti mataragli. If I feel my legs shaking, in other words, I feel myself wobbly, I feel that I'm starting to crack and to crumble, chazdecha Adonai yisadeni. What is going to lift me up? What's going to prop me up? It is your chesed, Hashem. It's my belief in you, Hashem, that is going to make me feel strong and stable again. Pasuk Yates, Berov, Sarapai, Bikirbi, Tanchumecha, Yishashu, Nafshi. Sarapai, the Meforshim point out, is my machshavot, right? That when I have bad thoughts, in other words, Hashem, when I question you, right, says Radak, right, Shani Mechashe Bikirbi al Galus Bavel, when I reflect upon the persecution, what you brought against your people, what is going to give me nechama, what's Tanchumecha, is, I'm sorry, what's Yishashu, what's my plaything, in other words, what am I going to rely upon? It's Tanchumecha. It's the Nechamot in your Nevi'im, right? Ki Adati, Ki Lo Yazveni. I know, Hashem, that you are not going to abandon me at all. So, Berov Sarapai Bikirbi, when I start to question you, when I start to have these heretical thoughts, Tanchumecha Yishashu Nafshi, I'm going to reflect upon your Nechamos, the comfort that you give through your Nevi'im, and that's what will keep me going. Pasachaf Hayichavercha Kisei Avot Yotzer Amal Alechok Yagodu Al Nefesh Sadik Vidam Naki Yarshiu Vayhi Adonai Lila Miskav Velohai Litzor Machsi Vayashem Aleim Esonam Uvrasam Yatzmitzeim Yatzmitzeim Adonai Eloheinu. Again, we finish off by a declaration that Hashem is my Miskav, that Hashem is my Machsi, that Hashem is ultimately the one who protects me. Hashem is ultimately the one who comforts me, and He's always going to be there for me under any circumstances. In the last pasuk, again, we return to this notion of paying back the enemies for the wickedness that they did. And of course, where do we get this Lechun Aranana from? It's the beginning of chapter 95, but that's not our chapter for now. Okay, so what did we see today? We saw today a chapter that is, I think, very relevant, right? It's complaining about evil being done in the world. Hashem, how do you allow, how do you tolerate this level of evil, this level of wickedness? Section number two is us essentially comforting ourselves. We put the evil into perspective by reminding ourselves of Hashem's ultimate justice, by reminding ourselves of our need to put our faith in Hashem, by reminding ourselves that we are limited in our scope of understanding and ability to comprehend the ways of Hashem in this world. And then lastly, I think it takes it more to a micro level, where David HaMelech says, even when you are going through personal difficulties, right? When he says, again, those lines, Ad matai, what am I looking for? Here we go. Miyakum li merim. Like David HaMelech says, like, who's got my back? I'm all alone. I'm abandoned. I'm being thrown to the elements. So that's when we reinforce our trust in Hashem, that He will ultimately be the one who will provide us with salvation. So it's a chapter about a personal plight of a person who trusts in Hashem. It's a chapter of how do you react to bad people when you see good things happening to them. And ultimately, it's a reinforcement of, I think, like the core elements of our emunah in Hashem, of our belief in divine justice, our belief in a system of reward and punishment, our belief in a system of belief in Hashem. That is how I would best summarize this chapter. We read it on Wednesday. Why do we read it on Wednesdays? I forgot to get to that. Why is this the song of the day on Wednesday? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that the reason why this is the song of day on Rosh Hashanah on Wednesday is because on Wednesday, Hashem created the sun and the moon. What greater conduits for mistakes throughout history were the sun and the moon? People worshipped the sun and the moon. It was a form of idolatry. It's what wicked people use to draw people away from Hashem. So we read this on Wednesday as a reminder that even those who use the sun and the moon as idolatry, even those wicked people that betrayed Hashem and that left the ways of Hashem, don't worry. Don't worry. Again, our emunah, Hashem's judgment, all of these ideas that we have been talking about, it's a reinforcement that even those who sometimes committed horrific acts of betrayal against Hashem, they will be paid back, and Hashem's system of justice is ultimately one that is perfect. I want to wish everyone a wonderful week. We'll be back.